Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake McClure.
And you don't seem to be very loud to me.
You're blowing my eardrums out, actually.
All right, we'll reset the microphones. Is that better?
It still sounds a little hot, but that's good.
Okay, I'm going to make a strange noise, folks. It's great.
There we go.
All right, we got that. All right, and
I'll make one, too. This sounds like the Klingon warfighters are approaching. I don't know if they can even hear.
I don't know. That wasn't too loud. Anyway, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and, yeah, we are running a little warm here on the microphones and cold at the same time. And let's see. I missed that part about our names, didn't I? I can barely hear you, so let me see if I can fix that.
You missed the last name. You said Jeff and Jake, and then you went running off to a knob somewhere. And
that seems to be... I don't know what you're doing over there. But there's knobs being
but
turned.
But it worked.
It did. It sounds much better now.
Actually, you were being picked up on this microphone.
That's why you had the wrong microphone turned on. Okay. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. We not only do we fiddle with knobs and dials at the radio program, we are also an SEC registered investment advisory firm. We're the principals at it anyway. And if you
come to our office, you have to go to the principal's office.
Yeah. Yeah. The purpose of this program is to talk about economics and the economy and
things of that ilk.
To some extent, how other things are impacting it, whether it be politics or weather, or very rarely we talk about how sports impact the economy. But
we try to stay away from that whenever possible.
Yes, yes.
Well, anyway, the telephone number's in here if you would like. By the way, my name is Jeff, and this other guy over here is?
Jake.
And we're still playing with knobs here.
Yes.
I've got a conspiracy theory.
Well, you're turning over the main master knob over there, and that's the part of the reason why I'm turning this thing up over here.
Well, that's because I'm trying to make these little things here go to the right place.
Yes,
and
it's
that
a conspiracy.
Way it doesn't sound like we're going...
Yes, okay. It's a conspiracy.
And that somebody comes in here during the week, either that or just before our show...
just changes random knobs.
Yeah, just starts turning random knobs and switches. It's about... Goodness, how many knobs and switches would you say there are on this?
Let's see. There look to be 10 big ones there with a switch associated with each big knob. And there's another at least 15.
There's like 36 switches and knobs here.
Fader and switches and smaller
and
knobs
they,
on
they,
there.
Most of them are like three position.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So if one of them is in a position, some...
And there are red lights associated with some of them, but they never go on.
I've noticed that. Well, those aren't actually lights.
Are they another button?
They're a button. You actually back when we had the equivalent of 8-track players.
Uh huh. You just hit that button.
You hit that button, and it would start the 8-track player that was associated with that knob.
Well, it's good to have buttons, and this is something that's just come out. The New Scientist, which is a British publication, which I take. It's a very, very. It's not on Scientology, by the way. It is actual science.
Did you say the nude scientist?
The New Scientist.
There's a difference?
And they just published an article on placebo buttons.
Wow.
There are buttons all over the place that don't do anything except make us feel good. There was a survey done of elevator companies. And two surveys actually done. One survey showed that 70% and the other that 99% of door close buttons on elevators do nothing. Or if they do something, you have to have the key in the slot and then you have to hold the button for a certain period of time and it goes closed. But just pushing it doesn't do anything except that the elevator door closes eventually and you get that little rush of happiness because you hit the button and the door closed. So people still hit that button. And crosswalk buttons. This was actually, there's a study done, the same study. British Magazine is printing out this study. I live in Austin, Texas. They did the study in Austin, Texas. So the study went from Britain to Austin, back to Britain for publication, and sent to me for reading in Austin, Texas.
Wasn't it nice?
They looked at the wiring and tested the crosswalk buttons in Austin, Texas, and they found out of over 3,000 crosswalk buttons, only one of them worked. Because they're on a big computer system now that is associated with the lights. But people, if you look at the crosswalk, will walk up to those buttons and push it. And they feel like they've done something very important. It feels very good to them. They stand and watch the wait for that light to change. And it changes. And they say, I did that. And then they cross the street. I find that humorous.
You know what I'm interested in?
What's that?
Which ones are still wired? and who determined which ones
there's
are still
wired? There's a
one
still wired somewhere. What is that one? I want to push that one.
I think somebody is probably doing a study from the University of Texas game theory study, and they say, what is the minimum number of crosswalk buttons we can wire, and the population still treat them all like they're wired?
Right. And there are many businesses that will put up thermostats in people's offices that don't do anything. They don't show the correct temperature, and they don't do anything when you turn the knob to make the temperature lower or higher. But it causes people to complain less when they can get up and change the temperature, even though it doesn't change the temperature.
Is that the one in my office?
That might be the one in your office. We may or may not have done that to your office. So the placebo effect works for buttons, too, in that if you feel like you've been able to do something, then it has an impact on the way you feel about the circumstances. If it's too hot in your office and you get up and you change the thermostat, even if it's still too hot in your office, you have a feeling of, I have accomplished something.
I read an article in the Wall Street Journal about a study. I think it was in the Journal. But the study itself was pretty interesting. I think it was University of Maryland. They would cut a candy bar in half. One half they would leave the wrapper on, and the other half they took the wrapper off of. Okay.
Okay.
And they put them in two separate containers.
Mm-hmm.
And they presented them to somebody and said, "What we need you to do is determine which of these." Which of these bars that are in the little container here taste better. And the difference between them was they had a very specific order of unwrapping that had to be done on the bar that had to be unwrapped. You couldn't just grab it and
couldn't just rip
it off.
You have to rip it a certain way.
Said it very important that you peel it off in a certain fashion. And so they had to go through this ritual to eat one of the bars. And the other bar, they just picked up and ate.
Uh-huh.
Now, remember, these are two halves
identical.
Of the same bar.
Right.
93% of the people reported that the one they had to unwrap tastes significantly better than the one that they just ate.
We're actually going somewhere with these studies, people. Yes, I actually have an idea. And you didn't even mean to. You didn't even know where we were going with that. You put it into it. Cognition is being studied very closely on how we proceed with things, why we make the decisions we do, and when we're trained to do things, how we go about doing them after we've learned to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's another very long-term experiment done with children and with chimpanzees where they take a very complex looking box with knobs and dials and holes and things in it, and the experimenter shows the subject in one set of one group.
I think they're called researchers.
Yes, the experimenters are called researchers. Research, yes. There, yes, okay.
That means they search a second time.
Shows the subject a series of things, a kind of a ceremony to get a treat out of the box. A little grape comes out of the box. So they stick a stick in one of the holes, and they turn one of the knobs, and they flip up a couple of the dials and pull out a slot, and out comes a grape. And you can't see what's going on inside the box. It's a big box, and it's just all kinds of things.
Right. It's a transmogrifier.
Right. Humans and chimpanzees learn the trick at about the same rate. So uh-huh. 2-, 3-, 4-year-old kid learns it about the same speed as an adult chimpanzee.
Right.
Okay. They then swap out the box for a plexiglass box of exactly the same make, with the same knobs and dials and everything else, but now you can see through the box, and you know that a lot of those knobs and dials don't do anything. They don't do a thing. So the researchers then again go through the ceremony of getting the grape out. The human children go through the whole ceremony exactly like the teacher did, just like the researcher did, and they get the grape out. The adult chimpanzees skip all the unnecessary steps and go right to the end.
Which means the chimpanzees are smarter than...
No, it means that they don't learn that sometimes other things might happen beyond their perception. We have advanced because we can remember things that have nothing to do with the thing that we're doing, kind of like the tides.
I do that all the time.
The tides coming in have nothing to do with the water. It has to do with the moon. And the when the rains come in the year have nothing to do with where the clouds are. It has to do with where the stars are. Because if you get monsoons in certain times of the year, how do you know what time of the year it is? Chimpanzees
right.
don't know that. It has nothing to do with their day-to-day life. So the way we remember things, those placebo buttons, the way we unwrap a wrapper, we get something deep down. We get pleasure by saying there's a pattern to this that we have to follow. It's where OCD comes from, where you have these patterns. You know, people with OCD, they have these patterns that don't have any effect on reality, but if they don't follow the pattern, they have this sense of dread.
I know it. I'm very familiar with that.
So that concept is applied directly to our daily lives in the market.
Are you talking about me?
Maybe.
All right.
Maybe.
Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. We have not given out our telephone numbers, and some caller is obviously...
Somebody knows.
...a human being
Somebody
because
knows.
They know that calling 773-1400 will get them on the show. Or
right.
they could call...
1-866-597-1400. Chimpanzees don't know that.
Right. Okay. Well, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't listened in a couple of weeks, and you may have already talked about this, but...
Neither have we.
Detroit's been in the news last month or so because of the bankruptcy. What
right.
other cities are queued up... and possibly going to do the same thing. I'm going to hang up.
That's a big question.
What other cities are queued up? Now, you put an S in front. I read quite a lot about that.
Yeah.
A lot of them, and we don't know.
Yeah. The question here is, has an answer of it depends. There are a lot of cities in the same situation as Detroit.
Like all of them in Illinois?
Yeah. Chicago is in a lot of trouble. It's in less trouble than some of the other cities in Illinois, but it's in a lot of trouble. And Chicago's a big city. It's not in the same boat as Detroit, though, in that the if you can put two major cities in a boat.
I was thinking about that.
It would be
that.
A big boat. Maybe we'll call it a continent.
Yes, there it is. Right. It is on the same boat.
Yes.
Though, right.
Okay. Detroit is a... not unique, but very strange case in that the population of Detroit has shrunk drastically.
And now, as a result, the average person is only 3 feet tall.
Yes, they're all very small. Very small people. The warm cycle was put on for too long.
Yes.
It has shrunk.
Yes.
We should actually use the economic term. Detroit has seen a population negative growth. It's a negative growth rate,
yes.
which is just a silly way of saying shrinking.
Detroit is suffering from an exponentially negative growth rate.
Right. Chicago has not been seeing the same level of negative growth in its population,
but
that's one of
the
factors.
How about the other cities that have had to declare bankruptcy? Did they have... That's one of the questions.
Yeah, that's why I was saying Detroit is a different situation from a lot of the other cities that are in the same kind of problems.
It's a really hard question to answer, and I know this sounds like it's absurd, but...
Yeah, of course it's absurd. It's on this program.
The problem that Detroit faced was that it basically didn't have enough money coming in any given month to pay all the retirees.
Yep.
I mean, in a nutshell, the reason they had to declare bankruptcy was because their retirement fund... had basically vanished because they spent it all paying retirees. it's exactly, and there's not, there's an irony here, but there's also a parallel that is more than just irony. That's what crippled and took General Motors into bankruptcy. And General Motors, of course, was headquartered in Pittsburgh.
And Chrysler. So General Motors, right. and not in Pittsburgh.
I mean, in Detroit. So
we were going to say Pittsburgh on another subject.
Those two issues relate to each other.
Yes. So the
major industry, and there's a point here. The largest employer in Detroit went bankrupt because it was paying its retirees a lot more than it could afford to pay them because of some bad decisions made in the 1960s.
So,
and Detroit went bankrupt because it was paying its retirees a lot more than they could afford to pay them,
right?
Because of,
let's watch the dominoes fall here. So Chrysler and General Motors stop paying retirees, declare bankruptcy, downsize drastically, move a lot of their plants out of Detroit. Detroit has a lot of people that pay taxes there that suddenly don't get paid any money because they were part of the retiree program. So they leave. They say, I'm not going to stay here. I'm going to go somewhere else.
And the rest of the properties in town, their fair appraisals, because they get their money from property tax, drops by 75%.
And some of them even further. There's a house that's been on the market in Detroit that's kind of the poster child of the real estate problem. It's been on the market in Detroit for over 500 days at $1.
Which means it probably would cost more to make it habitable.
Right, just to meet code. You would have to pay large amounts of money to make it meet the city code, which was designed for a city with a large number of people, with lots of permits required to build in the city.
And this is, I'm a great fan of a guy named Douglas North, who got the Nobel Prize in 1993 for accurately forecasting the fall of the Soviet Union in a book he wrote in 1978. And he is considered to be the originator of something called institutional economics.
New institutional economics. There was already an institutional economics, and he called it the new institutional.
The new institution. Well, whatever it was, he started it. And Detroit is a classic case out of his book.
Yes.
And the issue of...
it's socialism,
oddly,
writ large.
Oddly, Austin is headed in that same direction. Now, whether it will arrive there. And one of the things that we humans do, is we take a short-term situation, we project it out to the long-term, make decisions based on our short-term experiences, and in the long-term, that often is a really, 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 let me underline here, really bad idea.
So those of you that have been listening for more than 2 minutes know that we were just talking about these studies that have to do with chimpanzees and the ceremony that goes up to it.
Don't forget the alligators. Elevators.
No, don't forget the placebo buttons.
Right.
Because all of this has to do with Detroit. The caller was just very nice.
Detroit
in
is being run by chimpanzees and
to some extent
that have placebo buttons.
Even though we can think a little bit further ahead than a chimpanzee, and then we go through the whole ceremony of doing the thing, even though we know parts of it don't have anything to do with our end result. We still tend to look at the end result as being more important than the reason we get the end result. In the case of the unions, and by extension, the city of Detroit, these retirements were promised in the 70s. The contracts were written in the 70s to say you were going to get these amazing retirement plans, because in the 70s, we had no competition in the auto market. Americans were dominant. We had planned obsolescence because nobody else was making cars. So if we want somebody to keep buying cars, we just make sure that they fall apart exactly at the time that they're paid off so that you have to come and get another one. When the Japanese had their big influx of cars, and then the Koreans and the Germans and everybody else is now in the car market and they're making quality cars, well, we have to make quality cars. But because we started first and we were dominant, we had this big overhead, this thought that this is going to go on forever exactly like it is.
Boy, there's the classic.
And by making the decisions based on things are not going to change, they're going to be just like this forever, we doomed Detroit. We doomed the auto industry as we knew it. It had to change completely, and in the case of Chrysler Fiat, an Italian company that in the 70s, if you had said that Fiat will be buying Chrysler, people would have laughed you out of the building because Fiat made horrible cars. They were like little lawnmowers, and you couldn't do anything with them, and they broke all the time. And they were tiny, and you could run over them in one of our large Chryslers. So we doomed ourselves in that sense. We have to be looking further ahead than we have been. It's really hard to see that far ahead, though.
Well, that takes us around to another thing. It's a story that's in...
We didn't really kind of cover what other cities are in line.
Well,
there's a lot of them that may be. A lot of them may not be.
The reason it's a complex question about what cities are in line to experience the same thing is because, listen to what Jake said, if everything remains the same, then we can project out and say that there's a lot of places that are in deep trouble. If we have some modifications, there are still to correct most. Now, once it's kind of like in our business of managing wealth, when people start drawing money from their portfolio faster than the portfolio will support, and people have a tendency to do that because they say, well, you know, I had a guy say, I got $1 million. How can I possibly hurt myself by taking out a few tens of thousands?
Every month.
Well, not every month, just a few tens of thousands here and a few tens of thousands there. And I kept telling him, this isn't going to work. Well, I've had a number of people who I have to write letters to now telling them, you know, you either need to reduce your income or you're going to go broke. It's unfortunate and it's a reality, and people generally get very angry at that point because they had an infinite amount of money and it was going to go on forever and everything was going to be cool, and so they felt like they could dip into it. And that's a very common behavior, which is why relatively few people ever get wealthy. But the issue is that Illinois as a state is headed to bankruptcy. It, like Texas, has a municipal retirement fund for the state. Now, every city's not in it. Chicago has its own, for example. But most of the mid to small-sized municipalities in Illinois participate in a fund that is, if nothing changes, is going to be bankrupt. And the reason is, they have defined benefit retirement plans, and literally these were put together in the 1960s. And in the late 1960s, when these things were put together, the actuaries looked at the life expectancy of people at that time, which was about 70, 68, I think it was, and they looked at inflation, which basically hadn't done much of anything for a long time. They looked at all of this, and they designed something that looked like it would work. All the data from the late 1960s said it would work beautifully. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. People are living a lot longer. Because of improved health care and a host of other things, the life expectancy of the people in those plans now is well into the 80s. Among other things, one of the things that changed that was smoking. When, you know, the states sued the tobacco companies because of all the expense associated with treating people of low income, in other words, on Medicaid, who had smoking-related diseases. The fact is, the actual bottom line fact here is that smoking saved municipals, including states, a phenomenal amount of money because it caused people to die sooner. Well, a lot of people have stopped smoking, and as they stop smoking, they live a lot longer, which means that the pensions have to be paid a lot longer and the medical care costs have to be paid a lot longer. So how are we going to fix that? That's a really good question. But I can also tell you that just a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, California was headed to bankruptcy.
Well, I was actually going now, to list a bunch of the cities in California that are in bankruptcy.
But now, this year, California has a surplus, and California...
One of the things I was going to cover that very... We've talked about California a little bit. They've made some really good decisions, but they're good decisions made way too late. They're going to make them a lot better off in the future. But one of the issues, and I'm California's legislature has made some changes about redistricting, and they've done some things about getting the money balanced in their budget and that sort of thing that we kind of look at as a normal state of being in Texas. How did the state, which was on the way to bankruptcy, California was on the way to bankruptcy, it did not have enough money to get where it needed to go. How did they switch it around? And they've made some really good decisions, but they also passed the buck. They turned to the cities, which they had obligated themselves. The state had obligated themselves to pay these cities large amounts of money. The cities had made decisions based on that money being there into the future. And that's why when we look at the map that has the bankruptcies on the map,
they're in California.
They're in California. There's a lot of bankruptcies that may happen in Illinois, a lot of bankruptcies that may happen in Indiana, a lot of bankruptcies that may happen in the Rust Belt area. California's getting hit with all these city bankruptcies because they didn't want the state to go bankrupt. And the state just said, we're not going to pay the cities.
And so there's a lot of uncertainty, which is, by the way, one of the reasons that we are not great fans of municipal bonds, because they're all from little bitty places. And the uncertainty level is off the scale.
Again, if you think about the revenue stream that goes to municipalities, some of the revenue, vast majority of the revenue, comes from property taxes. Well, as everyone has noticed, property taxes have been lower for the past since the Great Recession hit. Okay, another revenue stream comes from the state. Well, that revenue stream is lower as well.
Right.
The last revenue stream, the one that everybody thinks this is the big one, federal government.
That's shrinking too.
Guess what? Sequestration is cut that across the board. Mm-hmm. So municipalities are being drubbed right now. People that think that we are overly optimistic about things, I think they just mute the part where we're talking about specific areas of the economy that we are not happy about right now. We talk about certain areas of the economy and we say that area looks great. The stock market is underpriced. We can look at that and say we see great things in the future. We look at the bond market right now, which is just as important to the economy of the United States as the stock market. And we see major difficulties there that take great deal of insight and planning before you get involved. So anybody that thinks that we're overly optimistic just doesn't listen to us, really.
And to me, it's one of those fascinating things. A lot of people locally, and I presume that most of our listeners are local, are greatly in favor of the United States of America balancing its budget.
Ooh.
But one of the issues about the United States of America cutting it without raising taxes, which means a dramatic cut in spending.
Yep.
And what that means is, and we were talking about the fact that California cut a lot of money that was going to local areas, counties and municipalities in California, and projects in California.
Big ones, little ones.
And in the process, they caused a lot of municipalities to go bankrupt.
Yep.
I hate to break this to the people in Central Texas, but the county in the United States with the highest net per capita federal inflow of money is a four-letter word beginning with B and ending with LL. And
Bill? It's Bill, isn't it?
Bill,
it's Ball.
Bill
Ball.
County, right.
Bill Ball.
No,
it's Bell County.
And as a result, the clamoring, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing for the nation. I think it's probably a good thing for the nation. But the clamoring for the federal government to stop spending a lot of money in places that are questionable comes home here probably, will come home here probably harder than any other location in the nation.
If you think we have impact aid going to the school systems, we
two
have
kinds, two kinds of
two
impact
kinds
aid.
Of impact aid.
One of which doesn't make a lick of sense in the world.
We have military spending. We have contractors. We have retired military.
And we have these big medical facilities here where their biggest source of income is the federal government.
Yeah, and if you doubt this, just take a moment and do some research. Google how is it that residencies or internships are paid for at hospitals. You're going to be a little bit shocked to find that almost 100% of that money comes from the federal government.
We have here in Texas the Armed Forces Medical School, right here in Bell County, Texas. And a lot of people don't even realize it's here. And they say, whoa, what, you know. So the question is, why does the Armed Forces not just hire doctors right out of medical school? Instead, and what they have is this big school sitting on Fort Hood that trains doctors from zero. And that, I hate to break this to folks, it's one of the targets.
Yeah. So it may sound to you that we're saying these things need to be cut, or that we object to them. We are simply stating the fact that they exist. I have actually gotten some email that was derogatory about how I am somehow saying that retired military people shouldn't get paid. And I have no idea where they got that concept. I am saying, and I will continue to say, that the vast majority of Congress did not serve in the military. And when they look at things that they are going to cut, they have a choice between somebody in the prime of their life with a full-time job getting paid at a pretty good rate that is also getting paid a large amount of money every month from the government. And they look at Social Security, where you have retirees that are not getting paid from anybody but the government. What are they going to decide? That's not my decision. That's me bringing the question up.
The 538 members of Congress, 83 are veterans. And that is actually a little higher than the population as a whole. But it's important to recognize that. This is the other thing, and this is the key that goes back to it. We need to break for commercials, and I just want to bring this back to the thing we started with here. The assumption that everything will go on as is, because in the short term it looks like it is a very dangerous assumption when it comes to investing in any form, when it comes to money, and actually when it comes to about anything. But it is one of those things that can get us in a lot of trouble when we're doing long-term investing. Investing, by definition, is long-term. Unfortunately, most of the decision-making that people use when they do investing is short-term. That's why most investors don't do particularly well. You know the old story about, you know, how to make a small fortune in the stock market.
Start with a large one.
And then you have Warren Buffett, whose company, by the way, reported, I think it was a 43% increase in earnings, 43 or 45% increase in earnings this quarter. He didn't even participate in the 1990s run-up. He says, I don't understand these companies that have their stocks running up and don't have any profits. I just don't understand that. And it turns out he was right. What happens is he buys companies when nobody else wants them. He invests where everything is down. And when we get criticized from people for the way we invest, it's typically because we're not investing in whatever is, quote, up at that particular moment, and we're not participating in the run-up in that particular asset class. There's a fundamental reality here. Don't assume that everything will go on as is just because it has so far. One of the issues around 2038, I think was the last 2030 to 2038, somewhere in that time frame, if you're a military retired person or you're thinking about becoming a military retired person at some point, just be aware that the total cost of funding military retirement sometime in that time frame, which is not that far in the future at this point, about 20 years from now, the projected cost of military retirement will take the entire defense budget of the United States to fund. That means between now and then, something's going to break. Just like in Detroit, when you looked 15, 20 years ago, back before the automobile crisis, and we lost General Motors and a lot of others, I read stories that if you look at Detroit's projected retirement bill, it'll bankrupt the city. And this is interesting. It's going to bankrupt the city about now. And sure enough, Detroit's gone into bankruptcy. The big issue is they couldn't figure out any way to change it. So they kept kicking it down the road. And that's one of those things, as an investor, that's important to take care of. We do have to go to commercials. You are a personal wealth coach. And if you'd like to call us on the other side of commercials, the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these important words from Town Square sponsors.
The memory is shot.
My legs feel like lead.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we were debating the efficacy of negative logic,
which caused me to try to figure out how to record and win. It's like, oh, all right, okay, that makes sense.
Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
In the last segment, I thought I heard you make a statement that the Armed Forces Medical School was located at Fort Hood.
Well, there's a big chunk of it there.
Actually, not.
They're not?
Not.
You mean the people that I have that are clients who work there don't work there?
The Armed Forces Medical School, the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences, which is what you're referring to as the Armed Forces Medical School, is located in Bethesda, Maryland.
Right, I got that.
And that trains, that's the medical school. Once people graduate from the medical school, some of them, in typically one or two per year, come to Fort Hood to do their residency training, either in family medicine or emergency medicine. Those are the only two residency programs that are at Darnall Army Medical Center. And in any given year, there are only one or two graduates from the Uniformed Services University that come to Fort Hood. So it's actually a very small part. The rest of the residents who come to those two programs typically come out of medical schools throughout the United States. After having been on the Health Profession Scholarship Program, where in return for an obligated service, the government has paid their tuition, et cetera, go to medical school.
Okay, but the bottom line to it is, and that's what I was trying to get to, is that we have people here who have come through the medical education program and are in the rest of their medical education program at Fort Hood, right?
Some of them, yes.
Yeah. Right, okay. And that is an aspect of federal funding that comes into Central Texas that, in my experience, the population is unaware of.
And let me step in here just a moment and say, caller, you're absolutely right. The Armed Forces Medical School is not in Fort Hood. We're sorry that we gave that impression. That's not what we were saying. Part of the training and the funding for the Armed Forces Medical School does come through Fort Hood, however. And we can look at press releases from the fort itself, the post itself, saying that new money is coming from this is and that's, and they quote that the Armed Forces Medical School money has come to Fort Hood for training of residents and so on. That's money that's on the chopping block, and we appreciate you obviously know the intricacies of that. You probably know the what parts are, which parts and what percentages are on the chopping block. In fact, should probably get your name and number at some point so that we could call you and ask you questions about the intricacies of the training process.
Well,
I figured out that real quickly, and I do recognize that the Armed Forces Medical School is somewhere else. However, again, the issue is that when I was looking at the things in the Defense Department that were likely to get cut and are already being have their funding reduced, there was a pretty fair-sized chunk of money that was under the head that is budgeted to Armed Forces Medical Training for Physicians that comes to Fort Hood. And that's one of those things that, come the end of this fiscal year, is an option for them to cut. It's on their list of optional cut items. And that's why I was referring to that. And you may already know that that's happening or something.
There's another fascinating point. I'm not trying to change the subject too much. It's still dealing with sequestration. The concept of sequestration, it was clearly stated as across-the-board cuts, not targeted cuts, across two areas of spending, and it looks like what we're doing in each of those areas now is much more targeted. We're looking at the things that we can do without and not do without sequestration overall for the long-term health of the economy of the United States may actually wind up being a good thing if we just continue to muddle along, actually putting in the smart cuts in the right places. We're still making decisions with a lot of cuts, which means a lot of good things are getting cut as well. But it is much more targeted than the original sequestration plan.
That makes sense? Are you still there?
Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Yeah. The issue, and we generalize a lot in here, and of necessity, because we try not to bore people completely to tears.
Speak for yourself.
And what I'm...
I do my best to bring up the stock of all companies that create tissue for the purpose of wiping tears away.
Yeah. The issue is that there are a lot of programs that are at Fort Hood that are other than the obvious thing of having a lot of tanks and soldiers at Fort Hood. And, for instance, there's a tremendous number of research and development. Now, the Research and Development Center for the Army, certainly not at Fort Hood, but there's a lot of research and development that goes on at Fort Hood from the Research and Development Center. And the same thing is true when it comes to a lot of other things that have come to Fort Hood over the years. Frankly, because we have had a congressman who is senior on the Appropriations Committee for a long time. We've had two separate congressmen, Democrat and Republican. Their policies towards the district have been virtually identical.
Yes. Protect Fort Hood.
And it is try to get little pieces of government funding for something that is, in this case, like in Bethesda, to Fort Hood. And they've done a tremendous job of it. However, a lot of that is probably going to go away. And we got a break for commercials again.
Yes.
So you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We'll be back on the other side with after these important words from KTM sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Got about 5 minutes left in the first hour. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And by the way, if you're listening out there and there's anything that we say that is out of line, we certainly encourage you to give us a call and straighten us out on that, because I have a funny feeling that we are very fallible. Not only are we fallible, but sometimes the information we get is fallible. I do want to say something.
Well, I got to say, he encourages it. I just encourage you to say, oh, yeah, they're great. Yeah, they're. Just
yeah,
send us.
Well, actually,
I tend to get a lot of the emails that say, well, that was wrong.
I like correction, and it is probably important to know. I think it's important to know that the Armed Forces Medical, it isn't called. It's called anyway. Whatever it was, it's at Bethesda, Maryland.
Yes.
Although they're going to take a hit too. Interestingly, there's an interesting point here, though. The budget cuts are not hitting the District of Columbia
The District of Columbia is looking great.
It's a really weird thing that happened last week. It turned out that because of a peculiarity in Obamacare, congressional staffers and the members of Congress were going to lose their medical care
and they
at
weren't
the end
gonna
of this
have,
year.
They weren't going to have it replaced by anything.
No, they had nothing coming in. So the president just said, guess what, we'll take the money that you're contributing currently to the federal medical retirement system, and we'll allow you to use that to purchase health care in the marketplace. In the marketplace that's set up for the District of Columbia, which incidentally, one of the choices is be on the federal PERS system.
They could just go right
back
to it. So
basically, he stepped, and this is what's funny. Now, here's an interesting point. Every legal scholar that's looked at this, every lawyer that's looked at this, said there's no way the president can authorize that. Congress
has
to do it.
That's a congressional thing.
And there hasn't been a single peep out of any member of Congress.
Do you know
the
why?
The president is overstepping his bounds.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because
they lose their health care.
Right. Well, this is congressional health care, and this is the aides, the people that actually do the work for them in Congress.
Yes.
And they know, just like we do, that if they do something, if they get together and say, we're going to have to change something, we're going to make a little bill that says this happens to these people,
there'll be screams.
There will be lots of screams. So, but what that's led to is a headline on the Drudge Report saying taxpayers footing the bill for congressional aides' health insurance. So that's the headline, and they, it makes it sound like that's never been the case before. But who do you think actually pays the congressional aides? Well, that's taxpayers, isn't
it? No,
of course not. It's money that comes from...
the Secretary of the Treasury.
Right.
No, the Chinese actually.
Chinese did it. No, it was not us. We didn't do that at any point.
No, we borrowed the money from the Chinese.
Right.
I want,
right.
Before we end this hour, I just wanted to tell you something. I'll talk about it a little more next hour. The Purchasing Managers Index is the gauge that determines what's happening in the manufacturing world. It is the best leading economic indicator about manufacturing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The PMI, it's called. Guess what country on the planet, of all the countries that have a purchasing, about 50 countries that have a Purchasing Managers Index, guess what country has the highest one?
Iceland.
No.
Guess no. The United States.
You got it. The United States is it just indicates a rate of growth.
Right. And we'll talk about that more next hour.
We are a developing country, I think.
Yeah, I think it might be. All right. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we actually do give portfolio advice for a living. You can reach us voicemail on the weekends or live person during the week locally at 947-1111, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You may email us at jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com. You may also go to our webpage, tpwc.com, which is the Personal Wealth Coach. And we've got podcasts there ready to go. And until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.